We have a list existing already from your notes of tons of Fear Club experiments already. Is the objective of this meeting to repeat those or to share new ones?
I think both. If that went through your microphone.
Okay. I think both, because there's part of reading an exercise and hearing it and having it in your body that is a different process. And I would say we can make the space for more invention, And so I'm putting this in the recording, and also for Selena and Jennifer, because I delivered three different series of Fear Club over, so 3 months, I have written down, I usually write by hands the exercise that I'm going to do. And I've had this commitment of putting them online, written properly, like typed, and I haven't just made the time for that. So what I've done is I've taken pictures and I've put them on this. I'm going to share the Trainer Path Archive Fear Club with all the photo. The thing is, I don't know if the photos have kept the order that I've taken the pictures in, because it's sort of, they come in sessions. So sometimes they build up on each other and stuff like that. So I know that Tristan Girdwood is working on transcribing the Rage Club exercise. And for now, we don't have anybody transcribing the Fear Club exercise. So if anybody here, Selena or Jennifer, or anybody listening to this recording, would be interested in transcribing my poorly written notes and photograph into a Fear Club handbook, basically. Please reach out to me and we can figure things out. Cool. But for right now, Vera will be taking notes for the exercise shared in this session, so she'll be frantically typing unless you want to share something.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else about that, Clinton, or?
Just that it would be useful also for different websites in the Start Over platform. Those things. So, but that's my business, I guess. Yeah. There's different, because the PM processes website would use all that, and also various like Conscious Fear website would use it also for the experiments.
I'll say it again. There's a template that I think Nicola actually has made, a empty template where you can write up the processes and exercises that you discover.
I've made a new one.
Okay, Clinton has made a new one.
And it's on the, is it the processes website? In any case, a new form is available.
Thank you. So that can be a place to transcribe some of the processes and exercises. I've also started more in the Rage Club, for Rage Clubs, but I would want to also, for it to exist in the Fear Club, is to have a handbook for the context of Rage Club, then the context of Fear Club, that is really useful for space holders. And then a second part, which is about all the exercises, and some exercises just take 5 lines to write. So you don't need a whole template for that, just the 5 lines. So I think we'll get to that at some point.
That's really funny. It looks like Chloe and Vera and I are three separate rooms. Sitting at the same table, but the backgrounds are
totally different. I sort of wanted to start this the sharing of exercise of Fear Club with a sort of context setting that I discovered and shared in my last Fear Club, which was a couple of days ago on Wednesday, is that, and anybody who delivered in Fear Club, please add in your own experiences, but somehow what I discovered is that it takes people to have enough matrix in anger to be able to really experience and use the fear at the subtlety, like at the elegance, at the wizardress, sorceress, magic level. And so I've, for me in the Fear Club, I've never let anybody come into the Fear Club and if they hadn't done some rage work before, in terms of them having this safe space and sort of blowing out the tubes. But even with that, I mean, there's so many layers and dimension of exploring conscious feeling and conscious anger and conscious fear that I feel sad that in the last Fear Club, what I wanted to do, and I, this is sort of an offer for anybody delivering like ongoing sort of series of Fear Club, is to start with 3 minutes of high intensity anger. So it's like the 3-3-3. You do it for 3 minutes, anger, then you bring them out to bring them to a stop and to an end and back to zero, let them integrate this anger for about 3-4 minutes, maybe less, and then to do 3 minutes of the 3-3-3 of fear back to back. And then people can actually, and that will put them straight in their body for the whole session. And on top of that is, what I would have wanted to do is to basically at each start of Rage Club and Fear Club to start people in the 3-3-3 process. And then they keep doing, so they do the months long doing the series, if the series is 1 month long, and then they keep going for a couple of months afterwards and have a team where they can also share what comes up when they do the 3 minutes. And I want to say that one woman actually started to do the anger and now started the fear, and she's going to do always the anger first and the fear during the time it overlaps, the 3-3-3 anger and the 3-3-3 fear. So I think it really helps for people, for your clients and participants, to build this matrix in between the sessions if you're having sort of multiple series. And the other thing I wanted to say about the context of Fear Club is, I took those notes because about the different powers, if we separate the different powers of fear, and I had fear as a power of creation. So this is ultimate creation into nothingness. And so it's exercise type speaking into the unknown, or radical honesty, or theater work, like start something, or give professional instruction from a different part of your brain and stuff like that. So this is all the creation power of fear. And then there's this power of fear of as noticing or scanning. And this is more about, yeah, like the antennas or the different ways of scanning. And especially with the distinction that we've been used to scan the bright things. We've been used to scan what shine and what attracts our attention. And we can use fear to scan into the dark places, to scan into underworld, because it would create fear in us to look in our own underworld or other people's underworld. So there was stuff like, that was a cool one. I didn't do it actually, but to look at somebody and to scan their first layer of fear, which is often sort of child emotional fear, and then the second level of fear, but you actually only tell them their third level of fears.
To look at someone and.
And you're going to notice the first layer of fear, which is a child box fear, basically. And then there's this second layer of fear, sort of reasonable fears. And this is sort of an exercise also. But in pairs, you go and you look at this person, you scan for 1, 2, and you only tell them their third layer down of fear. What are they afraid of at the third layer level down? So often we stop at the first layer, you know, I'm afraid of being judged, I'm afraid of being criticized, I'm afraid of whatever. Okay, but what's under? So this is the fear as a noticing, scanning power, and there's a lot of other exercise. And the third one that I got, and maybe there's more, is fear as a nonlinear possibility source, as a source of nonlinear possibility. And I have exercise in that. And then there's this whole domain of emotional fear to heal. And so many different layers of even subtle emotional fears. Subtle emotional fears and you know, higher intensity emotional fears. And somehow I was really excited to go into this, the feeling of fear and this like creation power and scanning and noticing and possibility, nonlinear possibility making. And people were a lot stuck at the emotional fear. They were really stuck at the level of emotional fear, stopping them from having access to lower level of the feeling of fear. So anyway, I'm sharing sort of in my sadness from my last fear club is I wanted to do a lot of feelings of fear, and I'm afraid that people couldn't hold it. I don't think a lot of people could hold it because we had to work with the emotional fear first. So this is why I would also really encourage to do those series and to not just do a day or like a 2 hour, to really build up this matrix. And we were just talking about it with Vera, who experienced it in the Rage Club, how people really change, how people really build matrix and change over a month long of practices and keeping in touch in WhatsApp groups and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, maybe this is more for online fear club that I realize is that for me, and maybe then I would ask for feedback or coaching, or for me, it's been really easier to take people in big groups online into higher intensity of anger, like build up the anger. 10% and then 25% and then 30% and having the noise of people and the energy, and it really works. And in the fear, I had actually to do single like coaching, really fine, subtle, elegant coaching for them to experience higher level of fear. And yeah.
So wait, is it easier for you to take people in groups online, take people towards high rage?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And then for the taking people for high intensity of fears, it takes more like one-on-one or two-on-one or something. Yeah. Yeah. Would anybody want to share about more what you've discovered more about bigger context or yeah, about fear? Lisa.
Yeah, I do have, I had an experience yesterday. There was a woman coming to a single coaching, and we were doing stellating fear. And the feedback she gave me was that it was very, very helpful for her, that I also went into my fear to build up this energy, because she would have felt very awkward to do it on her own. So coach while you're in your fear, and she was really happy that I said, okay, and that's this amount of fear, and I'm doing this with you, and this is okay, this will we go higher. It's really helpful for them. It's while you're coaching, doing the same than they do.
Cool, thank you.
I also saw this, and because I was in Anne Chloe's fear club, and when we were coaching each other for this fear of wanting something, I noticed that most people used this kind of reasonable voice, or kind of either rage voice or sadness voice. And it, what happened to the person who was trying to be with the fears, that they would have to source a lot more fear, because the space was being filled with sadness instead or rage. So I started coaching everyone to use fear in the voice to coach them.
Thank you. Cool. Yeah.
I wanted to amplify your original context setting for the uses of feelings of fear rather than simply the emotions of fear, because of I don't think many people even understand what's possible for the use of fear like that. And so I think there's more to be said or deepened about that, but I just wanted to add, you mentioned noticing, for example, or being attentive. And what that opens up is so many dimensions of nonlinear possibility of being aware of what we were not aware of before. And I think that the purpose behind Fear Club is not to heal fear. I think so many people have this weird thing of trying to heal fear. It's just the leftover from the old thought map of feelings. But it's still, the idea is make the fear go away. My life is better with no fear. And it's so much the opposite of that in reality. So trying to heal. I think the world is more complex than most people, than we're led to believe. The world is more complex with many dimensions than we're led to believe by modern culture. And because we're afraid of our fear, then we're not allowed to be surprised. Surprises aren't new things. We can't discover new things. And so when people can't discover new things, the world gets boring, and then they have to go watch London is down. What's it called? London Has Fallen, like violent, stupid movies on the TV or television series, because the world itself has gotten boring, when in fact, the world is so much richer than we're led to believe in, but we can't access it unless we give ourselves permission to be ongoingly in afraid as a food, fear, using fear as food for ourselves. And as, because just for one example, basically every space has a presiding deity. There's a presiding deity in almost every space, and it's usually located inside the physical space above the doorway, the main entrance. And if you don't acknowledge or relate to the presiding deity of a space, then your interactions, it has to, well, it eats you rather than you eating it. It eats, the space eats you, just uses you as a, I don't know, like a McDonald's hamburger or something. Just like you just, whereas if you come in a space and the first thing you do is use your fear to detect the presiding deity of the space, then you can greet the presiding deity and create a collaboration. So you can collaborate with the presiding deities of the space, and that requires this other kind of attentiveness where fear is okay. So that's what I was just trying to say, using fear as a gateway to a more complex world. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Selena.
Yeah, I'd like to share my experience I did with the Manuk one, like we called it Discovery Day of Fear, and it was last November. And I actually hit many of these problems that we talked here, like mostly that people came with wanting us to heal their fear, like saying, oh, I carry a fear of my car accident or something. And I mean, this could be a space for emotional healing process, but then it's not suitable for the whole group. And we started with just doing like the old and new map of fear, but it was more like intellectual in the beginning. And we had good results with like giving people that, like what the gift in fear is in the subtle levels that they could like, we did experiments with like blindfolding each other and one touching the other with different objects so that you would never know what sensation you had to expect. But somehow it also stayed in that like pleasant, touchy, sensual space. And not, I think people did not really get how this is connected to what they relate to as fear in their daily lives. And when we tried higher levels of fear, like it did not really work. Or what did work was when we did stage work of 1 minute presentations, because this really gets, like most people get fear when they have to do a 1 minute presentation without preparing themselves. And also like the first woman, she just talked about, like we said, 1 minute about fear, a presentation, and then got feedback and coaching. And then with others that followed, we like chose a dangerous question or a dangerous topic with which they checked in the beginning. For example, a guy being afraid of approaching women, and then we like had him show how he would do that and then receive feedback and coaching. And this worked for like getting people into fear, yeah. But I'm not sure if they got like how this could be cool, or if they still think like it's good to overcome your fear or something. And we did lying fear work, and this was, I cannot really say how well it worked. It was like, I think people, like it was very silent, the space. And we had Manuk like holding space and me also entering into the fear more. But I think, yeah, somehow people do not connect to that. Or, I mean, it's hard because they were not people like trained in other feelings. Like most of them didn't come to the Rage Club before. Mm. So I'm also glad for that hint that it's like maybe for some people it needs other work before. It was just people that were attracted by our flyer. And yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. In a lab in Mallorca, Caterina did this fear walking in the forest. So it was for about 10 minutes. A small group was walking with fear. So the exercise was to raise your fear, do not talk with anyone who's walking in the same direction, or in the same, with anyone who's walking in the same location, and walk with using your fear and raise it a little bit, first low level and then higher levels. And that was the only instructions given. And so what people did was they lowered the way that they were walking, the way that the posture was, that they were lowering their center of gravity, they were putting hands, they were moving more their whole body, and even and going through different directions, some going in really into the bushes, others staying really close to the floor. And when we came together and shared how different it was, that's when most people, I think, noticed what fear could be used for. So some people reported that they could pay attention to the little ants on the ground and the holes and the spiders. Others reported that even when they were meeting another human being, that they made eye contact, it opened this door of, I don't know who this creature is. So it opened more possibilities than, that's Marcus, that's Vera. And also to be very aware of the sounds and their own body and the relationship and the location of their body in the space. So these were, and it was I thought it was really cool because it didn't have any context setting. It was, we're going to do a fear walk and raise your fear, and this is what happened. But also that was in a lab. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to share one possibility, which is you can do this online. A lot of the ones I want to share are online, but they could also be done offline. But you ask the people in your fear team to go bring something, and you can either tell them or not before, but once they have this thing, their job is to break it. And then to notice what the fear of breaking that thing would be. I mean, like Aunt Chloe mentioned before, that we have so many subtle emotional fears that completely block us in our day-to-day life and possibility. So one of our fears is of breaking things. And so we won't touch things, we won't go near things, we won't borrow things, whatever, we won't, because we're afraid of breaking them. Well, if you just get something and just break it and then deal with it, you know, drop it on the floor, whatever, you know, take a pen and just break it, whatever the thing is, you just break it and go through liberate yourself from the prison of having this imaginary fear of what might happen. That's called break something. Another one I'd like to share is, it's really done well online, and you do it in pairs. And you, when people break out, you give them the instructions that the one person is the possibilitator and the other person, the possibilitator shuts their eyes and goes inside and tells them the name of an animal that they are afraid of. And then they open their eyes, and the person, the role player, turns into this animal, whatever it is. It's a jellyfish or a spider or a lion. I mean, one that freaked me out that I couldn't believe before was a Tyrannosaurus Rex, this old dinosaur, just freaked me out. And then when the possibilitator is suitably freaked out, you know, that feeling the fear, the emotional fear, because there isn't a Tyrannosaurus Rex across from you. There isn't a spider across from you. But you have this emotional fear about that thing, and the guy's enacting it right in front of you, being the thing. And then you look at what is, you report, you take note, what is the fear really about? It's going to bite me. I will die. I will have pain. I will look bad. I will be punished. Whatever the fear is really about, they go into that fear and talk about it. See, the whole point of this is to bring these unconscious fears into consciousness. And we don't even know that I did not know that I was afraid of a Tyrannosaurus Rex until I had this experience. But I was, seriously, I'd be walking downtown and I would be watching around corners of buildings and behind doors and things. I'm thinking this Tyrannosaurus Rex is going to jump out at me. And I think a lot of people have these things from, and even cactuses. You might be afraid of a cactus, you know, like things like that. So it's about making the unconscious fear conscious so that you get a choice about it. And so when the fear comes up, of course, you say, thank you, fear. And then the one little added thing that's important to that, thank you, fear, I will decide about this. Now that you have informed me and given me the possible information, I will decide about it, not you. The emotional fear, you do not get to decide about this. But I need the information from the fear. I need the fear to talk out at me.
Take a pause
for Vera.
Oh, wait, give me
10 seconds. Go ahead. You will love the video, Vera, when you see the video of the. Let us know and we can talk again.
Go.
Can I? I'd like to say one more before I relinquish the microphone. I have more, but we'll get to them later. So one is just fear of money. We have this emotional fear of money. And we, in other circumstances, one of the experiments to do is to carry $500 or euros cash in your pocket all the time. And so you can have the conversation online in pairs. If I carried 500 euros in my pocket, I would be afraid of, or I am afraid of, and have the conversation. Again, bringing the fear to your consciousness so that you get a choice about it. And once you've had the conversation about kind of diffusing the fear, making it conscious, or integrating whatever unconscious fear it was, then you can do the experiment and actually go around with 500 in your pocket and how that goes.
So we've done this experiment a couple of times, I think. I mean, one time we did this in the train of Taurus, actually. And so the three fears that mostly people have is fear that if I carry money, I will spend it. I'll spend it on things that I don't need. So that tells you that actually people don't trust themselves, or they're owned by their gremlin, or they're owned by whatever the impulse that pulls them. The second fear is that they will get robbed. So if they carry that much, then their attraction or whatever, they will get robbed, or they will lose it. And so you don't tell those fears before, but I think those are the only three fears that everybody, like that most people carry. And you can say, yeah. And it's just for them to realize that everybody has those fears, and that it's, and in a way it's insane. It's have they ever been robbed in their life? Have they ever lost their wallet in their life? Have they ever, how much have they really spent stuff on things they didn't need or whatever? And if ever, I don't know, this conversation gets into like that money is a topic or a theme in the group, there's sort of other question like, what is your limit? Like, how much would you spend without on something that you really want without thinking about it? Like, okay, is it 5 euros? You never think about spending anything less than 5 euros. You just spend it. Is it 10? Is it 50? Is it 100 euros? You don't even think about anything that's under 100 euros. You just buy it for yourself because you really want it. And so that's first question. And it's great to just have people say that out loud, and that it is instead of having it as a taboo conversation, like putting the money conversation on the table. And the other question is something like, what do you consider a lot of money? Like, what do you consider that you could have in your bank account and you can spend on a project and it would be sort of enough money for your project? You know, is it 1,000 euro? Is it 10,000? Is it 50,000? I mean, some people are stuck at 100. For them, having 100 euro in their bank account is already a lot. You know, is it 500,000? Is it 1,000,000 euro? And you see where people have put their block in terms of how much the universe can give them in their life. Yeah. Do you want to add something, Clinton?
I would change to the next one. Is that okay? People have a fear of who is knocking at the door. So you can do this in pairs online, probably even better than in real life, but you're in pairs and one person is the facilitator getting ready to write down, and the other person is the person behind the door. So I don't think they have to, turn their video off, but then they go, Can you feel the fear of that? You know, it's like it's a big fear. I could feel it. I had this thing go down my spine. It's like, oh God, you know, do I have an appointment? Did I miss somebody? It's like, what is that? The police? Like, what did I do? Or whatever. So you take note of what you're afraid, who you're afraid of knocking at the door, your parents, some rapist, murderer person, the neighbor who wants to borrow more eggs or whatever. And you go through the emotional healing process or skill building processes that your fear is informing you. You're not prepared to face the door. By the door here, there's this large rage stick right by the door. I'm looking at this rage stick going, who's going to come to the door that you're going to need to use the rage stick on? You know, Bear looks at me and goes, oh, murderers, robbers, stuff like that.
Knocking on my door. 5 in the morning.
Okay, drunks like that. Okay, so that's great. It's making more consciousness about that. This is fear of knocking. Who's knocking at the door?
One that is related to that is the fear of people calling. Even when we know, you know, on the phone now, we often know who's calling. And yesterday it was like, I had this fear of what do they want from me? I don't know. I don't know how to do it. You would be in pairs also. And somebody would just mimic the sound of the phone. Yeah. Like, ring, ring, and you can even say, I'm a friend, or, you know, announce who you're calling as, and the other person can notice the fears, like the unconscious emotional fears of, they want to attack me. They want to blame me for something. They want something from me. I need to make a decision. I don't want to make a decision. Stuff like that. And actually realizing how many missed opportunities for connection we're cutting because of this emotional fear of picking up the phone. Cool.
And another thing like related is like receiving letters that look official or that I cannot know.
Wait, Selena, before I just wanted to ask, cause it wasn't clear something that I was writing. So would the role player mimic someone that the facilitator said they were afraid of, or where does the mimic come from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Or random.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would. Random. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Selena.
Cool. Go ahead, Selena.
So it's just adding that a similar fear is that is receiving letters that you don't know who sent them. It's the same.
Mm-hmm. You mean like written letters, like postcards and...
Yeah, but just like letters from, I don't know, the tax office or something.
Oh, yes.
Or yeah. That I don't know if it's a tax office or if it's a something else.
Yeah, a bill that you have to pay. Yeah. Cool.
Jennifer, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I wanted to go into a different a different branch of what we're talking about. So if there's something you're adding on to this, then the question is, are you adding on to this or are you changing topics? Because I have something I want to add. I'm asking you, Clinton, because you were speaking.
I was going to change the subject to a different exercise.
Okay. Well, I have an extra or a possible topic/exercise that I would like to bring in as well on how to make it into an exercise. So what about, and Chloe, perhaps you brought it into the fear clubs already, but this that the things we're afraid of, we actually nourish them and make them bigger in our life. And how can we bring awareness to that in Fear Club, and what kind of process could be done to bring awareness to that? There's this example I have of someone I know that has fear of robbers and being robbed. And she has 8 locks on her door. And she's always getting robbed someplace. We've traveled together before. They break in the hotel room, they steal her stuff. They break into her car, they steal her stuff. Every time I speak to her, I sense that she's had things stolen from her. So it's, yeah. And so how can that be brought into a fear club?
I have 2 ideas. One, which is more about how you make things bigger, but not how you attract that thing to actually happen to you. But it would be in pairs or groups of 3, and it would be a form of stage work where you bring one of your biggest fear and you just make it big. You know, you exaggerate it, you tell every, you know, gory detail or details and really how it is inside of you. You bring it out and in a way that at the end it sort of sounds ridiculous. But it is really like that inside. And have a safe space. So it's not about, the space holder are not laughing. They're really holding a safe space to say, hey, I think I thought about this little detail and this might happen and this, and to let it all out. Mm-hmm. And so much a form of completing that fear. And the other thing that I was thinking of is how it's sort of about this hidden competing commitment where we think we don't want to get robbed. Like this woman thinks she doesn't want to get robbed, but somehow her being robbed makes her feel normal. It makes her feel like her story is true. Her box story survival is true. And so it would be about, again, I would do this in pairs, even maybe in groups of 3, because the groups of 3 has more different gremlins and different boxes and archetypal lineage. This one person says, this fear, for example, of being robbed, this fear of maybe being raped, this fear of drowning in the water. So I have something like that. I have this fear of going in deep ocean and being bitten by a, and it's true. It's right.
Why?
Yeah, there's nothing out there. I know there's nothing out there, but it's really a big fear. And to have the question back is, what's the benefit? What is, how come you would want to keep it that way? Why would you really want to be afraid of being robbed or something like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Clinton, do you have something in that?
I have a way to speak about that that provides possibly another gateway, which is you would get in probably, like you said, groups of 3, and one person starts to speak about the secret contracts, the energetic contracts that they hold onto. And this would be like what you were talking about, but it's a secret energetic contract for getting sick. It's like, I have this contract. I'm afraid of getting sick because I have a contract that I will get sick. I'm afraid of getting robbed because I have a contract. It's a karmic thing, or I saw it in a story, or my mother told me, but it's a contract that I'm to somewhere get robbed or sick or raped or to lose your partner in a relationship. You know, like I have this contract that I can't really be in relationship because my partner's going to go off with somebody else. These kind of, and so to admit your secret contracts, because they're things that you're trying to block against, but you cannot because you have the contract. And then the process that you go through with the other 2 people help you go through is to end the contract. So if you want to change that, you can end the contract for those things, but you have to make it conscious first. And the fear will tell, if you're screaming it at you, the fear is screaming, hey, you have a contract to do this from past life or some childhood fairy story or something, or you saw it in a movie or a cartoon, and it's this is always going to happen. I know this is going to happen, and you break the contract.
And the benefit really is keeping the victim story.
Yeah, that's one total benefit, to keep the victim story, and like, and Chloe said, because to make it normal.
Yeah.
But the procedure for ending the contract is the space holder talks to the client and says, and after you found your fear has found your contract for you, the one that you have about, let's say it's about that your partner's going to run off with somebody, then you have them close their eyes and you say, get the contract, go get the contract. Contract is written down on something. So not necessarily. Okay. It could be in their physical body, but it could be in a drawer right next to them, or their backpack, or in their pocket. It's just around. They can get the contract, and it could be made out of stone or steel or paper parchment. And it's written on their bone. I had a bone one, and it's written on there in some language. And it says very clearly that I have this contract that says my partner will always run away. So, and then you can have them take a breath and sink back to where they got, to go back to the point where they got the contract. So oftentimes this is a dark place. It could be in a dream, could be in childhood, could be a past life thing. Don't go through that whole process. Just go to the point where you got the contract, and you look at the person. Sometimes it's a person there that you got the contract with. Sometimes it's a cartoon, like I said, or a book, or your mom or somebody. And you hold up the contract to them and you say, long ago, I signed this contract. And you can see your signature on it. And it's carved or written in blood, or, and it says forever, basically. The contracts, they always say forever in them.
How long?
Yeah, the space holder says how, well, what does it say on the contract? How long is it for? But it's almost always forever. But you have to ask them how long it's for. And then you have your client, you have them say, long ago I signed this contract, and it's been long enough. I've done this long enough. I've learned new things. It no longer applies. I served my sentence. This contract is over. And then they break the contract, rip it up, contract, shatter the contract, drop it on the floor, and burn it. And they just put up whatever it takes to burn it. It melts down, it burns, it goes into smoke. And then you vanish it down a black hole, all the ashes and whatever remains, and you turn away and you walk away. Take three steps backwards, actually, and then walk away from the person. And that's it. And then it usually helps to put in some golden balls of your own energy and information that drops down, fills up the space that the contract was filling in your life before. But then you have a new life ahead of you with no contract.
I want to add that it's this, you know, your friend, for example, Jennifer, if she gets robbed, then she doesn't get to do a lot of other things. So she could have that as a strategy of saying, I can't travel. I can't trust people. I can't let strangers in my house. Whatever the things that would actually enliven her archetypal lineage or her life, because then she has a really good reason, because I will get robbed. I want to, it's something about the fear, let's say, the fear of, which is sort of the same, the fear of solving our problems. Like, some people are so attached to their problem and the fear of people solving their problems. And it would go in groups, I would do it in groups of three. And somebody would say, hey, this is my problem. And the exercise is called, the problem is the solution. The problem is the solution. And And then in groups of three, so either you can do it as a, like a team experiment, or the person holding the problem comes up with the solution and then there's feedback and coaching. I guess you choose, sort of choose depending on your group. But so the point is to change your perspective on the problem as a solution for your life. So for example, you know, one person can say, hey, I have this problem, then I'm often in low drama with my best friend. And this is my huge problem and I don't know how to solve it. And I've tried making boundaries and I've tried putting my gremlin on the side and I still have low drama with my best friend. And the solution is, well, the low drama is a gateway for navigating to undefendedness. For example, with your friend. Yeah. The low drama is a gateway. What you think is a problem is actually a gateway to navigate to undefendedness with your friend. Or is a gateway for, you know, writing a script, writing a really good low drama script for a TV show. And then you become rich and famous with your low drama with your best friend. And actually, that's the solution of, this is what it's for. Or low drama is a solution for you to learn how to agree with the other person. Like instead of having I'm right war, then you roll into this, actually, I totally agree with you. So I remember one example was we were doing this fair, unfair conversation in the trainer path. I think actually, Jennifer, you were in that group with Joanna and Mac. And Mac was saying to Joanna, I think there's nothing left in our relationship. It's all nothing. And there's, you don't want to put energy in it. It's all. And I coached Joanna to say, God, I feel so glad that finally we get to a point where we get to a nothing point in our relationship, where it's an empty space when we can build anything we want. I've worked really hard to get to this nothing place with you. So Mac is like, you know, relating to it as a problem, and Joanna say, hey, this is the solution. Actually, this is the solution. So this is what that exercise would be for. And then it's a shift from ordinary to extraordinary conversation, which is the creation power of the fear, how to shift into extraordinary.
Here's one called Fear of Looking Bad. Do it online in groups of three, and the facilitator tells, it might come to them during the exercise, but they start doing whatever it takes to have them look bad on the screen. They just start doing just kind of things that they wouldn't normally do to look bad. And then so watch for your computer. And you do this fear of looking bad thing. And then you tell the person across who it is you're afraid of looking bad for, and they role play that person. So maybe it's your mother or your father or the teacher, your boss. And you stay keep the looking bad thing going, and you have this conversation with them as a thing. So hello, Mr. Franks. Yeah, I got my job done today. It was a little slow because I have this thing in my nose. I don't know what to do about it. I was thinking of going to the electronics doctor to have it extracted. Or I figure out another place to put this paper, but it has to be there. But anyway, how are you doing today? So you have this conversation with the person you're most afraid of to look bad in front of until you have kind of as-is the fear, you know, until you grow out of it, basically. You know, as kids, we have a lot of fears of all kinds of things that are silly afterwards, like the dark, or dogs barking, or we're afraid of there's no food in the refrigerator, or something like that. We're just afraid of these weird little things. And so, but we grow up out of them, we grow out of them. I'm afraid I don't have any clothes to wear, or we have fear in these dreams. You know, you have this fear of all of a sudden, I don't know if you ever had this dream where you're you're in some kind of formal place and you don't have any clothes on. Do you ever, anybody ever have a dream like that where you can't move, or you're stuck, you can't move fast enough, and everything, all this chaos is happening anyway? Breaking all your teeth. Yeah. These fears that are just from childhood, but you have to kind of grow up through them. You have to grow up through the fear of going, yeah, you know, it's possible that something bad could happen, but you know, and it just doesn't usually happen like that. So I can just let it go of it. So this is a fear of looking bad. It's one of those kind of fears.
Thank you. You have to ask for expert instructions. Okay, Vera, are you doing okay? You're doing okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I realized really, I had this discovery by layers, how fear is such a resource also for connection. And how there's a bunch of different exercises for connection. And I wanted to share two of them. One is this, I'm afraid, so in pairs, that's happens in pairs, and I would give it about 5 minutes per person, maybe five, six. And one person starts and says, I'm afraid of connecting with you because, and if you can feel that people have some matrix, is don't say the first fear, but go, don't even say the second fear, say the third fear. Okay, so it's again, it's like going into the put the real poop on the table. And then say, please coach me, please give me an experiment of how I can be more connected with you. Like, can you give me ways that, I can create a different connection with you. And then they give one experiment or two, and then you do the experiment right there. So there's three steps. You do the experiment, maybe, yeah, 6-7 minutes, and then you change roles. Change roles. And yeah, and the other one was very simple, but people really loved it. It was to look at one person in the eye for 1 minute. So you time it. They just look at each other in the eyes for 1 minute, and then
you have to get up close to the screen when you do it.
Mm-hmm. And then one person shares one big fear that they have about the other person and one small fear. So in either order, they pick. They say one small fear and one big fear. And about them, yeah, about them, fear about them. And what people said is that the fact that they could share a small fear allowed them to be able to share the big fear, and to realize that they were not only afraid of that person at this huge, I hate 80% intensity fear, but they also had this small fear, and it gave them this multidimensionality of their connection. So it opened that door. And then you can change role. And I've also sometimes done it, you do it one more, you do it two times. So you do it one time, change role, and then you do it again and see what else shows up. And then change role again.
With the same person?
Yeah, same person. Yeah.
And when you switch roles, is the other person also looking 1 minute again into the eyes and then share? Or is it only 1 minute and then sharing both sides?
No, it's you go twice with the same person. Elisa was asking if the second part, do you go again, like one person, the big and small fear, and then change roles?
No, she's asking about the eyes.
No, yeah.
Oh, okay.
If you look again into the eyes for 1 more minute.
Okay, thank you.
Can you mute yourself, Vera?
Mm-hmm. So I would do it just also as a way of people deepening their capacity of looking in each other's eyes. So I would do it like that. Yeah. And I also wanted to share for some of you who've been in the feelings practitioner is to practice the feeling cycle in the fear club, because a lot of the feeling cycle has to do with avoiding fear or making fear really short. And to notice how we dance with other feelings around fear, and that is avoiding us to actually experience joy. And when people can actually experience fear like on a long time and sort of higher intensity, and then they got and they feel so glad about it, and then they go into joy, and it's for people it's such a revelation. So Selena, do you know about the feeling cycle? Okay. Would you ask any of us, like Lisa or Jennifer, even Vera knows about the feelings, or me? And because it's a cool exercise, I just don't want to, it's kind of long to explain. So would you? Yeah, cool.
I'd like to share online exercise, which is just deals or faces into this fear of going crazy, fear of being seen as being crazy. And it would be in groups of three with the coach, and the possibilitator would be the one going crazy, and the coach would coach you in terms of which dimension are you going crazy. And so there's so many dimensions that we're not even aware of that we could go crazy, and that we're afraid of going crazy. And so we block ourselves a lot. And so one example, we have a fear of looking crazy. So we don't walk around with our face twisted out away. But in fact, I just saw Jennifer do this. Jennifer, you just did this for just a flash. Did you see it? Anybody see it? I don't know. You looked up above your glasses and your lip went out like that. And I don't know what you're doing, but maybe you didn't think we could see you, but you were thinking about something, or I don't know, maybe your eyebrow was itchy, or I don't know what was happening. But but if you really were afraid of being crazy, your face would be dead. So many people have dead faces. And so they can't communicate the stories that they're telling. They can't share what's really going on for them inside, because their eyebrows are dead. They can't wrinkle their face. They're just completely dead. So the shape of the face is one. Movements, we almost don't move. We stay really stiff and dead. Our hands are dead mostly. So by getting over the fear of being seen as being crazy, your hands come back to life. And then they can do all kinds of amazing gestures and movements and communicating things and shaping space. And another way that we can be afraid of being going crazy is with our voice. And so a lot of people's voices are just monotone. They're kind of logical or monotone voices. And so it's a super work to go to the limit of what your fear of being seen as being crazy is, and then just a little bit beyond. You doesn't have to go very far beyond. It's like, don't hurt yourself and don't hurt anybody else, but go just a little bit beyond the limit, and just the limit will change. And then you can go just a little bit beyond that limit, and the limit changes. And it's more about getting freedom of movement than it is about being crazy. But we're so locked down, we have so little freedom of movement in many dimensions. And that's also with feelings. People a lot of times will not feel sad or feel scared because then they'll be seen as being crazy. So even though we're on the new map of feelings, it takes some exercises to go to the limit, like I said, and go beyond. So to actually move to the other side, to the new map of feelings, takes some work to do it. So this thing about the fear of being crazy or being seen as being crazy is really important.
I have a question.
My question about your exercise is the one about the voice, they go into the fear of?
Yes.
You follow the fear back to the thing that you're afraid of, and then you do it. So, man might be afraid of talking in a really childish high voice, or
sounding like some guy from the South who's kind of been chewing tobacco and has some kind of brain disease. It really hit me in the head with a frying pan when I was a little boy. So I had a speech impediment from my mother with the frying pan.
So there's many different ways the voice has, you want to keep your voice ordinary to be thought of as normal. Is that what you mean? I could keep going. There's lots of examples. But I think that's enough.
I'm not making any noise. I'm just making faces.
And also the fear about what, I mean, also about the words that we say, like going crazy and sort of the, you know, insulting politician or, I mean, people, for example, in Thailand cannot speak one word off about the king and stuff like, so it depends on the cultural thing and all the way, yeah, they get killed. So what are the ways that we're not getting crazy about the things that we say?
Which I didn't add in, but in terms of speaking clearly, as part of the exercise, you can speak in a language that's never been spoken before in the universe and practice that. I won't demonstrate right now because my computer would break down.
And I think in this game world, this is an important process because it's learning a new language. And I sense there's a fear, I know for myself, there's a fear of speaking out and not getting it right in the PM vernacular. So I sense this would be really powerful for the participants that are involved in PM. Yeah.
I mean, you can even do that with stage work and have two people speaking in two different languages that have never been spoken on the earth, trying to understand each other. So one is going, and the other one answers in their own language and see how far they get. They probably would get far. I get another one. Holy simoleons. The fear of calling a wrong number. So you have people get out their phone online. They just get out their phone and they dial whichever country they want to do a wrong number in. So the first level is in your own country. So you, like, for example, in Germany or Portugal, where we are now, you dial the area code for Portugal, and then you just dial some random number until it starts ringing. And as soon as it rings, the idea is to have at least a 3-minute long conversation with whoever it is that picks up the phone. So you don't know who it is or how, why they answered the phone, but whoever answers the phone, you have a conversation with them. And then you call up Iceland or Congo or someplace in Kazakhstan or someplace, you find the code for there and have a conversation with them like this. So this is, it changes from a fear of dialing the wrong number to an addiction to dialing the wrong number. And pretty soon, most of your favorite calls, you're calling people you never talked to before. And your phone bill gets outrageous. You have to watch out for your phone bill. Yeah, 3 minutes at least, 3 to 5 minute conversation.
Okay, about calls, then there's also the fear of the people that you're afraid of calling. So we did that in the past peer club. You give about 8 minutes to people. Often it gets a little longer, like 10, but you say 8 minutes. And they have to call somebody that they've been afraid of calling, like now, let's say, for a while. And if they don't pick up, you have to send a message to plan a call later. And then after you send the message, you call the next person. And then until you find somebody you talk to.
But when they did that, and when you did it, and Chloe, you actually in the message told the people, the first sentence of your phone call is, I have been afraid to call you because. So in the phone call, you say that if they pick up, but if they don't pick up, even in the message, you say, I have been afraid to call you because.
just so you know, the result of is I've had an hour-long conversation with my dad that I haven't spoken in about 8 months. And it was wonderful. So.
Okay. There's, oh.
I was just coming up with another exercise. Lately I was calling a woman to cancel an appointment I had with her. And in my mind, I came up in before which reasons I could tell her. So I'm not crazy that I'm canceling it. And then I got coached by Stefan, and he said, no, skip every reason you have. And then I said, okay, hello, Mrs. I won't come tonight. And then sat in my fear, what will happen, and asked, okay, are there any consequences? Like, do I have to pay you the money for this appointment? Or is it okay for you if I come the next time? And then again sit in the fear, because we often come up with stories or reasons not to be, A, to be crazy, and second, not to to be fully responsible, to avoid the responsibilities out of that. So this could be also maybe an exercise to call somebody without any reasons, not explaining ourselves.
Yeah, I was thinking about, it could be a similar exercise about saying I want. And even in German, in English, it is strong, but also in French and in German, actually in almost every language, saying I want has this like dominance or whatever, this fear of dominance or of, you know, it's this or nothing. And so to have people, I don't know, it would be maybe in pairs, and one person would start saying, I want, you know, I want to invite you to a 1 hour discovery space. And then when they say I want, and then to see the, and then notice the fear, and then they share the fear. And when they've done the fear, then they go to the next I want. So maybe give them a little time, like 7 minutes per person. And the space holder can also give coaching about, hey, you haven't said that fear, you know, to like sort of also scan for the fear that they haven't said, and then change roles. Yeah,
and there's also something there about having no reason. I want this, and not needing to give that reason or explain it, right? And bring awareness around that need to explain things and give reasons.
And I have the question with that exercise, if it's about like just noticing it, because that would be more like what Lisa said, like sitting in it, or would it be like voicing it? Because usually this makes it more comfortable to like say, oh, and now I'm afraid that this and that. So what is it more about?
I guess you can, I would experiment of, there's a, yeah, I guess you could do one time where it's like you sit in it, and the second time you voice it, or maybe you start with voicing it if it's more comfortable. And then you sit in it and just, you wait for an answer, or you mate your want. And because there's a part of bringing the, like verbalizing the fear has also this alchemical transformation of healing them or making them conscious. So I think both can be experimented with.
We have fears of being seen as being dangerous. And I don't mean dangerous in a aggressive or physical way, but aggressive as an uncontrollable or unpredictable way. And a lot of us conform to other people's fears. This is a huge thing, to conform to other people's fears. And oftentimes, I mean, many times I've been in situations where whoever had the biggest fear controlled the space. Whoever had the biggest fear limited what was possible. And this is a handicapped way to move through the world, especially in a team or a group. I mean, if you're in a family, you're kind of stuck there in a way. But if you get, as soon as you get out of the family, you can negotiate with more power. And so the exercise about this, many different kinds of exercises to do about discovering your capacity for being unpredictable and uncontrollable and quote unquote dangerous, but just simply a wild, you're like, it's recovering your wildness, becoming, we really are wild animals. And the worst thing that ever happened to us is that we've been civilized. And so to be yourself, to become human, means to get uncivilized. The one way that I think of to do that is when someone asks you a question that is not just like, what time is it? Or it could even be, what time is it? Like I had a boss one time in Arizona, and he'd go, what time is it? So I would have a watch on, and I would just look at him in the eyes and not answer the question. And I go, I asked you what time it was. I wouldn't say anything. And he goes, could you tell me what time it is, please? And I would, you know, this is a long time of, and I just looked at him and I said, I carry this watch for me, not for you. Get your own watch. And so, I mean, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. It's about not giving your center away. So a lot of times people ask questions and there's a certain time limit in which they expect you to answer or respond to their question. So if you have the power to not give your center away to that expectation, we're so afraid of following people's expectations and conforming to their fears. But we don't have to. You don't have to. You can heal that. You can become you can get yourself back. So somebody comes up to you and they have fears and they have expectations. You don't have to conform to those. You can stand in awe or in some kind of, it's sort of respect, but it's not even respect. It's sort of like looking at a broken bottle on the side of the road. You know, it just hasn't been picked up yet or recycled yet or something, but it has not much function. It's not really working. It doesn't work as a bottle. It doesn't work on the road because somebody could get hurt. It doesn't look nice, you know, but it's just there. And so somebody having these expectations or having this, their childhood fears in a space, it just means they haven't gone through their healing and initiatory processes. It does not mean that you have to conform to them. And you can straightforward say, So this would be a role play, probably in groups of three online. And one person says, you know, my mother's like this, my colleague is like this, my neighbor's like this. And then they do their thing and you practice not conforming to their fear or to their expectation. You hold your center and you don't give your center away, and you interact from reclaiming your wildness, reclaiming your it's not a right, but it's your birthright. You reclaim, just, it's human. It's human to be you, and it isn't, we don't have to be slaves of each other's neurosis. It's like that.
I'm thinking of
I have to say goodbye. I have a client. Thank you, everybody, for these wonderful possibilities.
Thank you, Jennifer.
See you soon.
Bye. Bye. Have fun next weekend.
Thank you. You'll see pictures and reports. Okay. Bye. Bye.
One that would maybe more to be a fear exercise in if you work in a team or in a group or a community or a business, or if people hire you for more group work. And it would be to, in groups of two or three, to find the fears in the team. So it doesn't have to be really with one person, but the fears in the field that blocks evolution, that the whole group is conforming to, and that's blocking their evolution. And then it might be a collective fear, or, and so it maybe if it's one person's fear, then there can be this offer of going for an emotional healing process. And if it's a, like this collective fear, then it would be sort of a collective healing process, or putting it on the table and hearing what the stories are about, or yeah, I guess inventing sort of an emotional healing process.
Can you share that the fear that brings creativity of answers as well? Because that yeah, that matches really well with what Clinton said.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to do with this is nonlinear possibility fears, giving not eight nonlinear answer. And it goes in pairs, it really works well in pairs. And one person is the person practicing giving nonlinear answer. And the rule is you have to, each question you have to give nine answers, and you only allowed one linear answer. And then the other person, the space holder, is the one asking ordinary question, like, you know, what time is it? Or how are you doing? Or where do you come from? Or what's for lunch? Or, and the coaching, it depends sort of who you're talking to. Some people are so stuck that even fantasy answers would awaken their wild part. So the fantasy answers would work. And you can also coach people to, it's not about making fun. Okay, the few coaching, it's not about making fun of the other person. So it's not a gremlin game. Okay, it's a shift from ordinary to extraordinary. And it's about being committed to your answer. Like your answer has a purpose of opening an extraordinary space. So it's not about making bullshit. It's about opening a door. And so it depends sort of on the you know, where do you get people. Some people just giving fantasy answers is a big deal, but then at the later stages about really opening this door, you know, what do you want for lunch? And the linear answer is, well, I would have a Caesar salad. And a non-linear answer would be, I am really starving for a transformational creation discovery space about this project that I really care about, and I need your intelligence for it. So are you having lunch with me? You know, and the food is just, who cares? Who cares what we eat if we can have a transformational discovery space? So, and that is a commitment. It's like there's a, it's not a joke. Yeah.
Can I just add one little thing, which is if you're at a lab and you have everybody make their plate of food and then you sit down at the table, make sure everybody knows they're not supposed to start eating yet. And then you say, please hand your plate to the person on your left.
Whoa.
So then you're eating, you'll notice the difference between how people put their food together, and then you really get an intimacy generating experience. But it's a, you know, we're really fanatical or finicky. Like the astronauts, they used to notice how the astronauts could not eat up in space because the order of the what they took a bite of next was not in their control. So they had to put the little things all so they could all open at the same time, make it into this paste that didn't just float around. You're supposed to eat this whole tube of pea soup first, and then this whole tube of orange juice. And it's like, that's what they had to do before, but the astronauts are going crazy. No, I want a sip of orange juice and then two spoons of pea soup and then a bite of cracker. Like they wanted, so we are really afraid of not being in control of how it goes. And so if you change a plate over, it's like, wow, big eye opener.
Okay, I would, I would call it the end. I would call it a day. I'd call it an hour and a half.
Lisa, did you have your hand up before? Was that?
Yeah, because there can also be like exercises for homework. I am doing an experiment right now. It started in the lab last week. I have the story. I need at least 7 hours per night sleep. And still after the lab, I'm now on 5 hours per night or sometimes less. And I'm still running and I feel totally good. So making just new experiences and to get rid of the story, whatever it is. And I have so much time at the moment to have deep conversations, to read really good books I always wanted to read. And it's cool and I'm still awake. I didn't die. So cool homework stuff.
I feel glad about that. Cool. Thank you. I really enjoy this exploration into fear and joy. Cool. I made this offer also during the Rage Club sharing exercise that a few times a year we can have this sort of sharing of the latest process and latest discovery on Zoom on top of sharing it in the trainer, Taurus, whatever the form is, and other labs and stuff, that Zoom can be a platform. And I will share both recording, the Rage Club and the Fear Club, in the PM trainer list and in the WhatsApp group, the Trainer Path WhatsApp group. So be available. Spiders coming off my head. Okay, bye. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Bye.